This is Double Play, a baseball podcast. Here's Dustin Sweetelson and Adam Burke.
Back at it again. It's the Double Play podcast. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, joined as always by Adam Burke. Another edition of the show, Adam. Another weekend through in the Major League Baseball season. And look, there was a lot that happened on the field, but it's one of those weird times where we're going to start this podcast off talking about some stuff that happened away from the field. Now, technically, what we're about to discuss happened on the field, but the stories developed off the field when I awoke from my slumber on a Saturday morning, Adam, and I got a text message from you. Before we get into the text message and what it said, I promise there was no pictures, no dirty revealing things. HR does listen to this. We are coworkers. We cannot cross any boundaries here on this podcast. But first, how you doing, man?
Oh, I'm living the dream, my friend. We're getting deep into the baseball season here. It's allergy season out here in Las Vegas, which is a whole hell of a lot of fun, especially when it's windy. And then I had two weddings and a meet and greet cocktail reception Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So on top of feeling like shit, I had a lot of Coors Light. So it was an interesting Sunday of doing absolutely nothing.
I'm just going to be honest with you. I think the hardest part to recover from is all the socializing. Like, I've reached the point in my adult life where I can carve out some time for social hours and like being around human beings. But as a single 39-year-old male, I like my alone time. And I think that much socializing, I would probably need a day off to recover from.
Well, I won't ask what you do during that alone time, but I will say this. The social battery was definitely drained. I mean, fortunately, and it was, you know, our VSIN colleague Femi Abefefe's wedding to his beautiful wife, Liz. Both families were fantastic. I went on the bachelor party in February, so I knew the groomsmen. I knew the guys. The boys are terrific. It was a lot of fun. But, yeah, just the social battery was very much drained by Sunday, and my wife is even more so than that. So it was good to have Sunday to really do nothing. And of course, as you know, it turns out we didn't talk too much about weather last week. We kind of mentioned it in passing. As it turns out, I was so excited to watch the Guardians game against the Twins on Sunday. Just sit down and enjoy, maybe see if Tristan McKenzie's velocity possibly came back. And of course the game was rained out.
Yeah. And I'm surprised you were actually excited to watch the Guardians, because the text message I woke to on Saturday was you letting me know that Shane Bieber was out for the year with Tommy John surgery, which...
I didn't even let you know. All I said was fuck sports. That was all yeah, I okay. said to you.
And then I went online. I was like, wait, what is he talking about? And here's the thing, man. That's one that came out of nowhere. We're talking a guy a little over 12 innings pitched to start the year, 20 strikeouts, hadn't allowed a run. Velocity was back up. And I was shocked when I read that he was going to be out for the year with TJ surgery, just because, I don't know, he was a guy that you and I pinpointed as a bounce back candidate. Obviously, I had my 30-1 ticket on the Cy Young for him in the AL, and I felt, look, as good as you could feel through two starts of a season, but it felt like I beat the market with a great number on a guy who was going to be in the mix all year long. And then I got your note, and I was like, oh man, that just absolutely is a dagger for Cleveland, who was relying on him at the front end of that rotation to stabilize things this year. As a Guardians fan, but as a baseball fan, what were your initial takeaways?
Well, I mean, it's brutal. And we're going to talk about some of the possible reasons why we're seeing such an increase in Tommy John surgery, not just this year, but also a lot of guys over the last couple of seasons as well. Now, you know, from a Guardian standpoint specifically, I mean, you know, Carlos Carrasco he's kind of doing the Eddie Harris from Major League and just kind of throwing the kitchen sink at everybody and hoping to get outs. So that's not really super reliable. And then McKenzie with the decreased velocity, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week too on the show. You know, then you worry about a guy like Gavin Williams, who may try to rush his comeback.
Yeah.
And when you try to do something like that, you know, then you could wind up with some kind of arm injury in that situation as well. So knock on wood, I'm hoping that doesn't happen here with Williams or any of the guys, you know, who are rushing to come back here for their respective teams. But yeah, you know, I think there's two ways to look at it, right? There were a lot of people that came into the season not really knowing what Shane Bieber was going to provide, because he spent most of last year hurt, you know, wasn't quite the same guy in 2022. And the Guardians were able to use that to get Tanner Bibee, Logan Allen, and Gavin Williams a lot of reps at the big league level last season. And those are guys that now you can rely on. So the thought was, okay, if Bieber's not Bieber or not close to Bieber, you know, hey, then they failed by not trading him, but it's not really going to materially impact the season. Then he looks really good in spring training, looks phenomenal in his first two starts. Then it becomes, oh shit, what do we do now? So, you know, look, with Joey Cantillo out for the first couple of months, he's got a bad hamstring. They're probably going to stretch out Xavion Curry and maybe Ben Lively, who they picked up from the Reds. But yeah, you know, that was supposed to be the strength of this team, was that starting rotation. And I'd still call it a strength, but just a mild strength at this time. They got to figure out a way to hit. And the one silver lining might be that the second the Super 2 deadline passes, Kyle Manzardo will be on this roster, because they're going to have to score runs now with what they're facing on the pitching side.
Yeah, and Bieber wasn't the only one who went down, obviously. We start with the Guardians because that's where our conversation began with these injuries. And then what is deemed as big of an injury as we're going to see all year long to a pitcher, the Braves announced that Spencer Strider had an MRI, revealed damage to his UCL in his right elbow, going to be further evaluated by Dr. Keith Meister. And they placed him on the DL or the IL with a UCL sprain. Now, we'll see what materializes here, but obviously if he's going for a second opinion, that means he didn't like the first opinion. No one goes for a second opinion when the first one goes well. You get a good report from the first doctor, you go, okay, cool, that's it, we'll run with that. And that is just an absolute dagger for a Braves pitching staff that is totally reliant on him. And I know they have other guys that are good, but we're talking about, what's Charlie Morton, 38 years old? He's 40. Okay, he's 40 years old. I love Chuck Morton. I mean, he's been a reliable pitcher, but at some point, he's going to break down. We've got Chris Sale, who you cannot rely on to throw any amount of innings. You could throw a number at me right now, and I'd probably take the under on Chris Sale innings any year, and it feels like a safe bet. I mean, Bryce Elder, a few others to rely on there for the Braves pitching staff. Ronaldo Lopez, who they brought over. But Spencer Strider absolutely crushes the Braves. I think less Adam in the regular season, but this is more what would affect them in the postseason where you're relying on him. Because I do think the Braves lineup is so good, they can mash their way to the postseason. That's going to be fine for them. Bullpen's good. Lineup's incredible. They'll be able to hit their way in the playoffs. Not having that ace at the front of the rotation for the postseason, and all this team cares about is winning World Series right now, that hurts a lot.
Yeah, I got to say, for Keith Meister and Dr. Neil Elatrachi, a lot less time on the golf course, it would appear, for them throughout spring and summer here.
If you're a parent out there and your kid says they want to be a brain surgeon, you tell them, no, the money's in elbows. And they're going to be like, right. What? No, the money is in elbows. Be an elbow surgeon.
Yes. Yeah, I completely agree with that. It's going to be a long spring and summer for those two guys, I think, between, you know, exams, consultations, and then, you know, the actual surgeries that they'll have to perform. Look, you know, here's the thing. I mean, this is the difference between the Guardians and the Braves, right? The Braves are going to score 6.5 runs per game. So, yeah. You know, if they don't have great pitching, it kind of is what it is. Losing Strider, I agree with you. In the regular season, it's not as big of an impact. In the postseason, it certainly could be. Now, again, I mean, they will definitely be a player at the trade deadline for additional arms if they need to be. But keep in mind, I mean, this is a team that came into the season with Max Fried, who missed a big chunk of last year.
Yep.
And his first two starts have not gone well at all. He's got an 18 ERA over his first five innings. Now, from a contact management standpoint, the data doesn't look as bad. He's actually allowing a lower exit velocity than he did last year and has a better hard hit percentage against. So I think he's a bounce back guy pretty quickly, so long as he's able to cut down on the walks. But you had Sale out there, who, as you mentioned, I mean, a guy who's crossed 100 innings one time since 2019. You've got Ronaldo Lopez out there, who hasn't been a full-time starter since 2020 during the COVID-shortened year. And then Chuckles Morton, he's over 40. And his walk rate last year, his walk percentage was the highest of his career in a full season at 11.6%. So while he struck out almost 26% of batters, he walked a lot of guys too. It didn't come back to hurt him. But again, I mean, the aging curve kind of comes for everybody. The quality of his stuff is going to decline as we go forward. And that's a guy that over the last couple of seasons has actually seen pretty big bumps in his hard hit percentage against. So you were relying on Strider to give you 180 innings of elite work and hope that a lot of the rest of these guys either bounced back or were able to stay healthy. Now you don't get that from Strider. And while they have depth, and Alan Winans will be the first guy who gets a chance here, you know, they have AJ Smith-Shawver, who I think a lot of people sort of felt like, especially in the fantasy community, felt like he could be a breakout guy this year. I mean, he's not even 22 yet, and he already made his MLB debut. So he was a guy kind of fast-tracked to the big leagues. I think they'll be okay throughout the regular season, but keep in mind, one of the things that we've talked about on this show here already, really smart organizations, teams that have their shit together, not only at the big league level, but at every level throughout the minors. Because of the quality of the players that they've drafted and developed, they are a team that is uniquely positioned to put together a package to get a frontline starter that comes available. Now, obviously, it would have been interesting to see what Dylan Cease's market would have looked like at this point in time if he wasn't traded during spring training.
And they were in on him.
Right. Yeah, they were definitely in. I'm sure they wish that they had done that now. But look, I think Atlanta, as you mentioned, for 162 with that lineup, they'll be okay. But this is also a spot where if you get a cluster injury and Sale goes down or Lopez goes down or Morton goes down, or, you know, even if Fried goes down again, like then it becomes a little bit more problematic, at least in terms of winning the division. You know, the offense will carry them to 85 plus wins, I would say. But, you know, at least in terms of the division, then maybe it gets a little dicier.
Yeah, but look, if there's one organization I trust to just find people to fill the role from within, it's the Atlanta Braves. I can't tell you how many times someone went down for Atlanta and they'd make a call to Gwinnett, someone would get called up, and all of a sudden that player would be so good, they would stick on the major league roster even when the player they're replacing returned from the injured list. They're just a model organization that knows how to build from within. I trust they will have bodies that will be serviceable, if not plus, to fill the role of Spencer Strider. The only problem is when you're looking at filling the role of a Spencer Strider, you're looking at a guy with electric stuff who takes the burden off the rest of the team because the offense knows once every fifth time in the rotation, they don't have to do that much. Now, I do think Strider's been a little overrated lately because of his obsession with velocity, and maybe that's how we got here in this first place, Adam, with his arm, because this is his second potential Tommy John surgery on the horizon here. I think the obsession with throwing hard, the obsession with the velocity, the spin rates, all of that, I think he's actually become less of a pitcher the last year or so, and he's been more of a thrower. And I think the numbers indicate that with the way he's gotten hit. But I think with Spencer Strider out for the Braves, like you said, regular season, they'll be fine. Curious to see who becomes available, though, at the trade deadline for them. Because remember, Alex Anthopoulos, a few years ago when they won the World Series, they had a bunch of needs. And one of them was replacing Ronald Acuna Jr. Remember that, their best player. And they traded for Jorge Soler and Eddie Rosario. And there was a couple other key moves made at that deadline that allowed the Braves to surprise everyone to win that World Series. So not only do they have the players from within to look at to replace Spencer Strider, we know Alex Anthopoulos is a guy who makes the right calls and pushes the right buttons when he needs to.
Well, the question that I have now in kind of thinking, you know, who's available now as opposed to who's available later. I don't think Trevor Bauer gets a major league job.
No,
that's not going to happen. He may never get another major league job. And I think that that's probably the favorite at this point in time. Does Julio Urias become a guy for them? Because he is a guy on administrative leave by Major League Baseball. So we don't know exactly what the penalty is, if there is going to be one. The LA District Attorney's Office back in January decided not to pursue charges against him. And for those wondering, he was arrested for felony domestic violence in September of 2023. Witnesses saw him assaulting a woman after a soccer match outside the stadium. You know, he winds up getting put on administrative leave a few days later. Major League Baseball really hasn't said or done anything about it to this point. He also got arrested for domestic battery in 2019. So he is a guy with two cases against him. You know, one that was dropped, I guess, one that was dropped without charges. The other one, he had to complete a counseling program. Now, the difference, I think, between these two guys is that, you know, Trevor Bauer is kind of it, the appearance is that he's universally disliked, you know, and obviously his case got a lot of run, significant run. Urias's case kind of had run for a few days and then sort of went away. Is that something that the Braves would consider? And is that something that would, you know, I mean, look, they've they've done a lot of things the right way organizationally. I know that they had some things with the previous regime and bonuses for Latin American players. I know that was a thing that kind of came to light and why some of the previous guys were kind of banned from baseball for a little while. Is that something that they would do? Do you think they even need to open up that can of worms from a PR standpoint?
Look, I lived in Atlanta for a while, and having just like watched this organization from the outside, like, I don't have any inside sources there or anything, but they're a franchise on the up and up. Like, they do things the right way, and they already have Marcelo Zuna on the roster.
Well, that's
and
a good
he's
point.
Got he's gotten into a couple issues now, and it's one thing when the guy's already under contract on your team and you can't really do much about it. It's another thing if you're going to bring someone in from the outside. I think there's some legal pending stuff with Julio Urias that has to play out before they could even consider that. And let's be real, if he's cleared of those charges, everyone's going to be in on him because he's been a good young pitcher early in his career. I don't see Atlanta making a move like that, not with Ozuna on the roster. That's my initial lean.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And other guys that are, I mean, Zach Greinke would be kind of fascinating.
Oh, my God.
Matthew Boyd, who knows? I mean, his, his medicals kind of, that manila folder is really, really thick with him. Dick Mountain, still out there. Rich Hill.
I mean,
he's still hanging around.
What's he, like 45 years old? He's going to do the Jamie Moyer?
You imagine him and Charlie Morton in the same rotation?
That's incredible.
No, I mean, those guys are closer to Social Security than some of the other guys on the roster.
Well, I mean,
look, obviously, but yeah. I mean, like, they're closer to Social Security than they are to like the prime of their career. So
yeah. It's like when someone tells you that like 2003, 2004 is what Dazed and Confused year, I think 1976 was to us in 2003, 2004. That's how I feel about those guys in retirement.
We're getting old, dude.
Yeah, bro, it's not. Waking up's tough. I got to be honest with you.
I mean, look, it's always good when you're counting up the days instead of the days no longer counting.
Yeah, sure. Look, I don't know what the Braves do, but I know that they will always find someone from within to pop. And, like, I remember, like, there was a year where everyone was going down for them, and they called up all the kids. It was, like, the Frank Cor years. And it was Frank Cor and McCann, and all of a sudden the whole roster was all kids who were just overperforming in their rookie years. And I know the Braves as an organization, they just do these things right. Look, I want to move on to this though, Adam, because they weren't the only two pitchers who went down over the weekend. And he's not a superstar. And we don't need to discuss the impact of him, but I just want to highlight Jonathan Loaisiga, right elbow surgery, out for the year. So that's three pitchers in an early weekend of the baseball season out. So that adds to this list of pitchers who've gone down for the year. Yuri Perez lost during the week. Lucas Giolito in spring training. Dating back to last year, who's not going to pitch this year, Felix Bautista. Shane McClanahan's probably not going to pitch this year. Jacob DeGrom will likely be back later this year, we think, but who knows with him? He's missed so much time over the last few years. Sandy Alcantara, another Cy Young Award winner, not going to pitch this year. And let's not forget, Gerrit Cole's on the shelf, probably in some worlds would be having elbow surgery, but he's going to try and rehab this thing and get back for, I don't know, the second half for the Yankees, maybe in June, maybe July. But there's a chance he doesn't return either. When we talk about, man, baseball needs star power, I think pitchers are a lot of that star power, and all of these arm injuries, especially elbow injuries that have become an epidemic across the sport, we're losing stars that are worth watching and tuning in for once every fifth time in the rotation. That's my biggest issue with these elbow surgeries. I feel for these guys personally because the rehab is just absolutely grueling for an entire calendar year to get back. And even when they get back, sometimes they're not at 100% when the next chance it is for them to return to a rotation, and then it's delayed. But I look at baseball as a sport, Adam, and this is an issue that is plaguing the sport on multiple levels. You have superstars who are not performing, and that hurts the game overall.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's just a very short list of the guys there. I mean, you're talking
about
the
stars.
Right, and how many guys that are, above average types of pitchers? A Tony Gonsolin, a Dustin May, Tyler Molly, Luis Garcia, Herman Marquez, Robbie Ray, Jeffrey Springs. I mean, the list goes on and on. And again, we're talking mostly just starters. I mean, Kyle Bradish is another guy who seems like there's some UCL damage there with him as well for the Orioles, where you know, if he comes back, I mean, they're already a really good team, but he's obviously a, you know, number one quality, number two type of guy. And the list is only going to grow as the season goes along here. And look, I mean, there are a lot of factors in play. I mean, I think it's really hard to try and pinpoint, you know, a lot of people saying the pitch clock. I'm sure that's part of it. You know, the COVID year didn't help anybody either. The accelerated spring training, you pitch, what, 60 innings in 2020, and then all of a sudden you're back to 175, 200 in 2021. Like, that didn't help either. You know, and I think the one that people don't talk about enough is the ban on sticky substances on the baseball. Yep. Now, yes, I get it. They're all mudded up, right? They're all mudded up before the game. They're not going to be mudded up consistently, by the way. And, you know, we saw Pete Fairbanks complaining about the balls in Colorado coming out of the humidor a couple of days ago. And he's a guy who's had some arm injuries throughout his career, too. So, you know, that's a guy I would definitely take seriously what he's talking about. But, you know, all the rage right now, people think all the rage is velocity, and it is to some degree. All the rage right now is spin rate.
Yeah.
Is spin rate is something that with the technology that we have now, not me and you, but with the technology that MLB teams have now, they're able to look for that and they're trying to generate as much spin as possible. And a lot of times that will mean adjusting the grip. And a lot of times adjusting the grip will adjust the torque on the elbow. Again, I'm not a, you know, biometrics guy. I follow what driveline baseball does. I'm not an expert in this by any means, but I've definitely read a lot on the subject because you know, in the handicapping world, I try to look at, you know, pitcher injury indicators and stuff like that. But in the quest for spin rate, you know, when you take away the element of the sticky substance on the ball, it's a really big deal. And we know that Gerrit Cole was using something, whether it was spider tack or, you know, something else that was very, very well documented with his, you know, increase in spin and all of that. There were a lot of whispers that Shane Bieber was doing the same thing in 2021, and I'm sure a lot of pitchers were.
No, so, they were. Yeah, they look, these guys are chasing the spin rates they had with that. So with
because
that
it makes you money. It makes you better.
And with that comes over effort. Like, that's the thing about pitching, is there's a max effort, but there's an over effort to it. And you have to remember, when you're throwing, what you're doing to the body is not meant to do that. So these guys are out there saying, well, with the sticky stuff, which, by the way, if they're in the majors up until that point for any amount of years, they were using something. I remember we had Jerry Blevins on a show I was working on when all that stuff was going down during the ban. And he was like, guys, your favorite pitcher uses something. I'm just letting you know that. He's like, I learned early on, it was suntan lotion with something else, some block and rosin, and you mix it and you get the right consistency that works for you. Everyone has their own method of doing this, but trust that your favorite pitcher is using something, because those baseballs are impossible to grip and you have to do it for perfect control. So not only are we losing the control factor, but now these guys are chasing the spin rates that they had, when I think baseball could just have a uniformed substance that they hand out to everyone and everyone can use it however they want. And that would help this problem. But I think there's a deception that comes with these elbow injuries. And I've talked to a lot of people about this. This has been something I've really, like, I've been into a lot of my life, but they look like traumatic injuries that happen now, but they're actually chronic injuries. The way it's always been described to me is it's like a butter knife sawing at a rope. So just over time it happens. And a lot of it begins when players are younger and misuse of the arm. And I know people complain about youth sports all the time, but it's not just youth, it's college. It's when they're in the minors. It's just, it happens over time. It's just, we see it happen to these stars now at this high level. But the thing is, it's happening all over the place. There are guys who never make it to the majors because these happened to them earlier. And I also think the slider becoming more prevalent in Major League Baseball, that's more torque, late pronation on the elbow. That's not good. The pitch clock that you mentioned is interesting, because when I look at the pitch clock, I don't think the pitch clock alone is what's causing it. It's rushed mechanics that causes this, right? It's the fact that, oh, crap, there's 3 seconds on the clock. Get set, make a throw, pitch it. And the rushing of the mechanics, not going through your normal process. And the thing is, this is something these guys have done their entire lives. And now they're having to rush that process. That's how we're getting to the point we're at now. you slip your mechanics enough, eventually you have pain, you pitch through it, next thing you know, things aren't working right. And I think the sticky stuff, as you pointed out, absolutely plays a major role in all of this. There are a lot of factors at play when it comes to this. I just don't know how we solve a lot of these problems.
Well, and that's the thing, right? There's a lot of factors, so there's no true fix. You know, I mean, when you look at fastball percentage, as you mentioned, this season here so far, four-seam fastball percentage, according to StatCast, 31.5%. That's down almost 5% from 2019. So in basically a five-year span, if we kind of leave out the COVID year, which had a bunch of outliers and weirdness anyway, in a five-year span, about 5% less four-seam fastball usage and over 5% more slider usage. So, yeah, I mean, that's what we're seeing because, you know, the other corollary to this is hitters are better than ever.
Yeah.
Like, hitters can get to velocity. Hitters, you know, 94 used to be tough for hitters to get to. 94 is basically the league average at this point in time. Like, it's crazy. So, you know, there's a lot of factors in play here, and that's why there's no fix. And I like what you said about the pitch clock being, you know, something where you rush through mechanics. I mean, you know, you have to throw 100% max effort, right, on every pitch at the MLB level because you're out there trying to make money. You're out there trying to make a livelihood. And if you're kind of holding back or something like that, you're going to get hit hard, and it's going to impact you in a negative way. So these guys are throwing max effort, and then there's less recovery time on top of rushing through your mechanics, like you said, you know, the sticky stuff and the spin rate thing. And this, believe me, this isn't just a Major League Baseball thing either. This is a minor league baseball thing too, where the balls are going to be even more inconsistent, especially in terms of pregame preparation with them. In the minor leagues, you're playing in so many different environments, especially as you jump up levels. Like, you go from double A to triple A, all of a sudden you're pitching in elevation. You know, you're pitching where it's hotter. Maybe it's harder to get a grip on the ball. You know, you're pitching in double A in a colder weather climate. It's tougher to get loose. You know, there are all these environmental factors in play as well that there's really no fix to this. And the UCL, from what, everything that I've read, the way that the ligament is designed, you know, you can strengthen almost every part of your body. You can strengthen your lower half. You can throw more with your lower half. I mean, Spencer Strider is a guy who looks to have a very strong lower half, has good mechanics.
You're saying he has a bumper? You're saying he's having a big,
it's exactly
big
what I'm saying. Yeah, yep, that's exactly what I'm saying. I bet he's got some elite calves as well. But here he is having Tommy John surgery, and people are like, oh, well, you know, you got to throw with your lower half too. Seems like a guy plenty capable of throwing with his lower half, and here he is having Tommy John surgery. So there is no fix for this.
Yeah.
And the thing I was getting to is the UCL, they say you can only strengthen it to a point, that there's not much you can really do to, outside of having a bionic arm, there's not much that you can do. So this is an epidemic that will continue. I think will continue to get worse. And, you know, it's also kind of interesting that Rob Manfred wants to bring back the importance of the starting pitcher. Well, yeah. Look at all these starting pitchers that are having Tommy John surgery that are kind of going five and fly. And I understand the theory that, hey, if a starting pitcher is going to have to work six innings because a team's only going to be allowed to have 10 or 11 pitchers on the roster, they can't throw max effort all the time. Well, when you've been throwing max effort all of your career and now somebody's asking you to do something that's different, a change, uncomfortable, guess what's probably going to happen anyway?
Yeah. Well, look, Adam, that's the last thing you just said is the biggest problem is leading up to the major leagues, the highest level, you do it one way and then you get to the majors and you have to do it a different way because of the pitch clock, because things are different, right? And I think that is what's messing with things. The routine, the way these guys are able to recover, everything's different at the major league level, but that pitch clock, we still need studies to prove it. I don't think it's directly the pitch clock. I think it's the rushing with the pitch clock, and that's the biggest issue. But let me put on my Scott Boras hat for you, Adam. When I look at other sports, let's use the NFL for an example. If a NFL team invests a lot of their salary cap in paying a running back and that running back gets hurt, they're screwed. So we've seen the running back market in the NFL kind of dwindle. People don't tend to pay their running backs a lot of money. Why would Major League Baseball teams pay a lot of money for a frontline starter? It's one thing to pay a little bit, average salary, whatever it may be, for a 3, a 4, a 5. But why would you invest 30, $40 million into a number one starter when you could lose him at any point in the season, opening day, second start maybe, like a Spencer Strider? Why would you ever pay that guy that much money when he could be gone and all of a sudden your World Series dreams are crushed?
Jordan Montgomery won a World Series. Jordan Montgomery was really, really good throughout the regular season. Really good for Texas, too. 2.79 ERA in 11 starts. He signed his contract on March 29th. Like, the season started the next day.
Yeah.
Like, this is an excellent point that you brought up, because, you know, you almost... I know people say the art of the starting pitcher is kind of dying or whatever, but teams, and I've always advocated for this, especially if you're a smaller market team, your goal should be, we have 10 starting pitchers that can give us 100 to 120 innings each. Like, just piggyback and tandem and opener and whatever it is that you need to do. Because also, I mean, with a lot of guys, there is a certain point where there's a drop-off, right? When they get to a certain innings threshold, like, they're just not going to be as effective. They're going to wear down. They're going to get tired. I think if you really wanted to try and call, you know, injuries with pitchers a little bit, you play fewer games, and that's never going to happen. Well, so, I mean, again, it is one of those things where, I think you should just expect four innings from the starter, and you should piggyback them, and you should tandem them. And that's the way that I would go about it, and try to get all of my guys internally to be good enough with two pitches to get me through four innings as a starter.
Well, and look, that's what the Rays are doing, right? Like, that's what and the dinosaurs listening are not going to like this, but this is why teams don't care about throwing 200 plus innings anymore, because the wear and tear that comes with that. It's like, why am I going to drive my car on a long road trip, Adam? The mileage adds up. I can, you know, drive part of the way, whatever it may be. Like, why would you do that to your pitcher, who you need for the long haul of the longest season there is? There's no sense in wearing them down with these extra throws. Everyone's got a threshold, right? Everyone's got a breaking point where there's a point of no return and that injury is right around the corner. The best way to avoid that, to guarantee I have Zach Eflin for the entire year, is he's a 4-5 inning pitcher, but I know I can get the most out of him in those 4-5 innings.
Well, and the thing about it too is, you know, in the minor leagues, I mean, these guys aren't asked to throw 170 innings. You know, they throw 120, 130. Teams try to bump them by maybe 30 innings or so, you know, each season. Look, when Shane Bieber signed out of UC Santa Barbara, in his first full minor league season, he threw 173 and a third innings, which, that kind of took me by surprise when, you know, I was kind of going through. I know he had a couple of 200 inning seasons at the big league level, but 173 innings in your first season of pro ball is an insane number.
Yeah.
And I also think about a guy like Corey Kluber, who, you know, his arm fell apart. Now, he was a guy that threw five straight 200 inning seasons for the Indians, topping out at 235 and two thirds in 2018, the first year that he won the Cy Young. There's also something here to be said about use him and abuse him, right? Like, you know, especially if you're Cleveland, for example, you know that you have a Shane Bieber or a Corey Kluber caliber guy for five seasons, right? Because then you have to make that decision. Are we going to trade them or not? Because we can't afford to pay them. So you can use and abuse them. I mean, I think about the guys in the bullpen, Andrew Miller, Cody Allen specifically.
Yeah.
You know, a Vinny Pastano type of guy. You know, these guys were used. They were ridden hard. And then after they left Cleveland, they were never anything else, because they had just declined so much from a skill set standpoint. Like, teams don't have to worry about the long-term viability of anybody on their roster. They're going to maximize them for as long as they have them, because there's a lot of people whose jobs are on the line, right? General managers, scouting directors, managers, certainly, you know, all of that. They're going to get every ounce they can squeeze out of these guys, and they don't give a shit what they're like when they move on.
No, look, you worry about your future. I have to worry about my future. My future is, I have to capitalize on our window to win. You're a part of that as a pitcher. We're going to maximize what you do. Now, I won't totally crush your career, but we're going to make sure that we're putting you in position to win us ball games. And sometimes you're going to have to pitch when you don't have your best stuff. Sometimes you're going to have to go on the mound when you don't have adequate rest. It's just a nature of the business of what we're looking at here and these windows to compete. Look, baseball is at a crossroads. They have to find ways to make this work. I just don't know how they do it. I think there's so many teams out there that are going to be affected by this. Like, I will always come back to the football comparison and the running backs. Like, that to me is what this reminds me of. At some point, we're going to devalue the position of starting pitcher. And it's starting to happen. And I just don't know where baseball goes from here, Adam.
No, I don't know either, especially because, you know, we being fans, we treat Tommy John like it's just a rite of passage.
Dude, it's... I've seen guys go through shoulder rehabs, elbow rehabs. Obviously, we've seen the knee rehab stuff. Dude, it's a long, grueling, slow. It's the slowest process. It takes an entire calendar year. Also, we're taking away a year for someone who hasn't gotten that next contract. We're taking the opportunity to prove what they're worth for that next contract away from them. So now it hinders their value when they hit the market, whenever that is.
Like, it's insane that it's gotten to the point where you kind of listen to people talk about this and they're like, oh, well, you might as well just have Tommy John and get it over with. Like, that's not how this works.
Well,
like,
no, Spencer Strider's having his second Tommy John potentially.
Right. And well, that's the big thing too. You know, there is a higher risk of re-injury as well when you're injured the first time. I mean, that's just true of basically every injury that's out there. You know, you tend to have a higher, you know, risk of re-injury. And that'll be another thing. We're going to start seeing a lot more guys having Tommy John for the second time. And, you know, I mean, I realize that the advancements that have been made with that procedure are extraordinary. I mean, it is a procedure that is done to such a high volume now that, you know, Meister and Elatracci and anybody else who's doing it, you know, they could do it like the back of their hands. That doesn't mean it's good for pitchers. It doesn't mean it's good for, you know, all the rest and recovery and all of that.
No, it takes forever. Now, look, not to be crass, but when you lose Spencer Strider from a betting perspective, let's put our betting hats on because it's something you and I do over at VSiN. It does open up the NL Cy Young market, right? There are more options out there just because Spencer Strider was a guy you knew was going to be in the mix all year long just because the numbers were going to be monstrous. What does
plus,
hurt, though...
Plus, he developed a curveball, so we were expecting even more strikeouts.
Yeah, and the thing about it, Adam, is he was by far a heavy favorite to lead the league in Ks, lead the majors in Ks. That prop's not really available at a lot of books right now, from what I can tell. So if you bet someone else, you have a chance in that market. Also in the AL, Shane Bieber going down. He looked awesome through a couple starts. I think that opens things up to take some risks. However, these two are the reason why betting a pitching market like the AL and NL Cy Young is absolutely risky business right now. You could lose the guy you bet on at any point in the season. So I think from a bettor's perspective, I'm going to be a little bit more careful about who I put my money on.
Yeah, admittedly, I don't do a whole lot with the award markets for that reason. I mean, you know, yeah, you can do as much homework as possible to extrapolate stats and kind of project out where you think guys will be. But ultimately, this is, with some guys, a yes, no, will they stay healthy or not? And that's true of any sport, especially, you know, the NFL. It doesn't take much to tear your ACL. You know, it doesn't take much to fracture your ankle. I know they got rid of the hip drop tackle, and God knows how that's going to play out. But, yeah, I mean, that's what this is. And that's why I think, you know, Even in season betting these awards, like Tyler Glass now looks pretty good, looks healthy. I saw him talk on a podcast about, you know, how he's done some things differently, gotten some different opinions, stuff like that, to actually be healthy.
Yeah.
Who knows if he's actually going to be healthy? I sure as hell don't. The one guy I would say that kind of intrigues me at this point, and he doesn't look all that good right now, would be Max Fried at 25-1.
Over at DraftKings right now, I wrote down three names. He was one of my three names in the National League. And I think when you bet this market, you have to understand when you're buying low on someone, you're getting a good number. Like, I bought low on Blake Snell a year ago, and I wasn't even at the lowest point. I think Mitch Moss, who we work with, had like 100-1 or 80. I can't remember what he had. I had 40-1 on Blake Snell, and then I came back again at 25-1. I agree with you. I think Max Fried can only get better from what we've seen. Like, hopefully there isn't an underlying injury there, because I don't know if the Braves can overcome that.
Well, it's one of the things where, you know, not only are you handicapping performance, but you're also handicapping narrative, because this is something that's voted on by human beings, writers, who need to have a story to tell. And what's the story you tell about Zach Wheeler, right? Oh, he's been really awesome for several years in a row, and people are just now starting to take notice. You know, Zach Gallen, we talked about him on the last show. The velo's down. He allowed a ton of hard hit contact last year. That's not a guy that I really believe in all that far. Freddie Peralta, yeah, I mean, maybe, sure. But he's a guy who tends to, you know, get injured. And also, I don't know how good the Brewers are going to be.
Yeah.
But Max Fried, if he goes out there and performs at a really high level and he fills in the void of Spencer Strider, that is your story. That is the easy byline that you can write, talking about how Max Fried stepped up in the absence of Spencer Strider. And not only that, you talked about this with Scott Boras a little bit already. You know, there's a little bit of pressure in play here at times as well. You know who's a free agent this offseason? Max Fried. So if you're, you know, his agency, he's with CAA, you know, and you go, ah, hey, look what our guy did. You want to help us out a little bit and, you know, write this glowing piece and get all this fan sentiment and all this momentum behind this guy? Yeah. We'd really appreciate it. You know, yeah. So I think, and again, I mean, 25-1 may not be the low point. This may be something we kind of wait and see if he does sort of sort himself out a little bit. But again, the narrative is there too. And the narrative is almost as important when you're talking about the, you know, the short prices to win these awards. The narrative is almost as important as the stats, because a lot of times the stats will kind of cancel each other out.
Yeah. Another guy I thought about, Adam, was Yamamoto from the Dodgers, because he settled down since that first start in Korea. The strikeouts are definitely going to be there. The stuff is pretty filthy when you watch the highlights. I mean, he just has nasty movement. And there's something to be said for, I think, the way the Japanese players train. I remember Ichiro a long time ago. It was more about pliability, flexibility than overall strength. And look, I'm just spitballing here. I feel like that could play into a factor of not having to rely on the elbow so much, potentially. I'm not sure if that actually affects the pitching mechanics, but I think he's a guy who's actually going to get better and get stronger as the season goes on, as the game kind of slows down at the major league level to him.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with that, especially when you consider, I mean, he's likely going to be on the best team
yep.
in baseball. And that's something, too. You know, I mean, we've talked about this. The Braves are going to ride their offense into a really good record and into a playoff spot. But the NL felt like Atlanta versus Los Angeles in terms of who would have the best record. Strider definitely lowers the ceiling a little bit for Atlanta there, whereas the Dodgers, I mean, they have the elite lineup to go along with an embarrassment of pitching riches.
I'll tell you what, here's where Strider going down really bums me out. And it shouldn't bum me out. The Braves ruined my childhood. I once got to talk to Fred McGriff on the phone, and the first thing I said to him was, "You ruined my childhood." Because as a Mets fan, the Braves were just the model of consistency. Every year they won that division. Every year they went to the postseason. I know they only had one World Series to show for it, but the fact that you could rely on them every year being there was incredible. And there was a rivalry between the Mets and the Braves. And there were rivalries when we were younger. And I was asked by someone yesterday, what's the best rivalry in baseball? To me, the best rivalry in baseball right now, unfortunately, is pitchers versus their elbow and Rob Manfred versus the players. Those are the best rivalries. There are no more team versus team rivalries. Spencer Strider and the Braves could have potentially created this Braves versus Dodgers rivalry where neither of them, based on the age of their core guys, are going anywhere for a long time. And they would have been competing in postseason after postseason. And it would have been so good for the game. These two monsters on opposite ends of the country. You got the Southeast in Atlanta. You have Hollywood in LA. It was kind of the perfect opposite battle. And we're just being robbed of that because Spencer Strider's elbow is falling apart. And that's what bums me out the most.
Not to mention being robbed of that last year because of the variance of the MLB playoffs.
Yeah,
because
that too.
I mean, you know, when those two teams played, excuse me, I think it was in August, I want to say, like, that series was hyped up big time. And then, of course, we didn't even get it in the NLCS, unfortunately. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's tough because, you know, it's another thing, and I know that the Angels commentators went on a rant about this, you know, over the weekend, but it is difficult that all of baseball's headlines are negative things more often than not.
Yeah.
And now you get this one where, you know, fans already get disenfranchised. And I mean, I kind of grew up with this, but fans already get disenfranchised because they're like, well, I can't fall in love with a player because he's going to be gone. Now, it's a little bit different because these guys are signing these, you know, mega contract, double digit year deals in some of the really big markets. But if you're a fan of a medium or small market team, it is tough to develop, you know, love for a player because they're likely going to be gone at some point. And that's kind of a tough thing to get through. But now it's also like, I can't even invest in these pitchers because all these guys are going to have Tommy John surgery. Like, baseball's ongoing perception problems, some of them self-inflicted, some of them not. This is just another extension of that, I feel like.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to end this, Adam. Next podcast, they drop every Monday, every Thursday. We'll actually talk about games. We'll talk about some baseball that's occurred. But I think this was a good therapy session for where the game's currently at with this crisis with the elbows. So anything you want to add before we say goodbye?
There is one small thing I want to add, because I think this is interesting, and it was something that kind of caught me off guard here a little bit. Last year, the league-wide caught stealing percentage, remember, bigger bases, pitch clock, we had more stolen bases than basically ever before, more stolen base attempts than basically ever before. Last year, the league average caught stealing percentage, 19.8%. This season, 23.6%. So either pitchers are paying a lot more attention to base runners, or teams have figured out some kind of way to slow down the running game to some degree. But I thought that was a fascinating early season development, that the league-wide caught stealing percentage up 4.8% from last year. So the players have adjusted, to be sure.
Interesting. All right, we're going to have to monitor that throughout the season then. Let's see how that picks up, slows down, however it looks. Because one thing we know about baseball is they'll find new ways to exploit whatever they can. There'll be some new innovative way. So, all right, that's a good point to end it. For Adam, I'm Dustin. Thank you for listening. This has been Double Play Podcast.